Assalamu alaikum, hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Retail Remix Stories powered by Find. This is your place to get up close and personal with inspiring leaders who are not just building great businesses, but are also, through their massively transformative purpose, shaping the future of commerce in the region. Our guest today is someone I'm envious about because he holds two roles. Hassan Tamimi, the CEO of Altanan Group. Welcome to the show, Hassan.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be on the show. Beautiful concept, beautiful idea of putting together this podcast and bringing together the entrepreneurs of the Middle East and then giving them a platform to speak and tell their stories. So thank you for this opportunity.
No, it's a pleasure to have you, Hassan. I've been looking forward to this. And, you know, we've known each other for a couple of years now. And I've seen you grow both as, you know, as a professional and a leader. But for our listeners and our viewers, it will be good for them to know a little bit about Hassan, right? So where is Hassan from? Where did you grow up? What was your growing up days like? Any key influences that have shaped you to be the person you are today?
Of course. So a little about Altanan Group really quick. Altanan Group is a family business. We're third generation down in the family. Oh. I was born in Canada, grew up in Canada. Had my high school days in Canada, a bit of my high school days actually, did some of it in Dubai. But my family was always based in Dubai. So it was my dad flying in and out. And then from Dubai, we've expanded our business internationally. A little more about me is I finished my education in Canada. Well, my early education in Canada. Dad didn't want to keep me far away from him. So he brought me all the way back to Dubai. Continued education in Dubai. At the same time, I realized that education is the same everywhere. And it's not something that's changing. So at a very early age, I was like, you know, Dad, can I get an investment from you so I can start something on my own? And having the family business, it was focused on the kitchenware industry, which is something that it's fun. I have to say it's fun, but it's always the same thing. I mean, yeah. It's cookware. You just change the shape of a cookware or the coating inside it. And it's pretty much the same developments. But it's something that, of course, everybody needs. It's something that every home needs a fry pan. Every home needs an air fryer. And it's something that, you know, he's been doing it with passion. And I came on board and I was like, okay, let me change the way that things are shaped. So he was manufacturing it and
amazing,
distributing it across the CIS countries, Middle East, North Africa. And it's been doing well for him. Right. Surprisingly, based in Dubai, we didn't have a strong presence in Dubai.
Oh.
So I came in and I was like, I want to create a retail concept. And I don't want to name it his brand name. I created a new name called Dairy Home. We opened up in El Wasl Square. That was my first project. I was in school in the morning and in the store
what?
In the evening.
No ways.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's inspiring.
And then from that story, we developed, we opened Mercato. That was the first mall that we opened in the kitchenware industry.
And then what year was this?
This was 2012.
So not very long ago.
No, it wasn't long ago.
Okay.
And then from there, we've expanded into, you know, Dubai Mall. We had one store in Dubai Mall that opened up. Down the line, I continued reforming it. We did very well. Numbers were very well. We were growing into becoming a leading retailer in the houseware industry. Right. Having the manufacturing on one side and then the retail on another, it was just something that was nicely coming together.
Amazing.
But then I got bored.
And probably got into college by then.
Not yet.
Not yet. Wow. Not okay. Yet. So it's all happening in school.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Luckily, I had my dad's... So my dad had his fair share of different things he was doing as well. And he had a friend that had a concept called The Little Things. It was all about household collectibles.
Right.
So similar to our business, but not similar at the same time.
Yeah.
I came on board. My dad was like, okay, you know, you want to expand even more? Here you go. Take this business on board. I took it on board and I didn't understand a thing. I had to fly to Paris for a show. And there was all these decorative pieces, checkers, and all these weird stuff. And I just didn't understand it. You know, I was like, okay, now I need to buy for this store. And I have no idea what I'm going to buy.
Right.
So we brought in toys. I found some local suppliers in the UAE that did toys.
Nice.
And what I realize in the toy industry is everyone's competing with each other. It's something that, you know, you have Toys R Us, you have Hamleys, and then you had a lot of other retailers that were just competing with each other head to head.
Right.
The only thing that we can be different on is the service. So yeah. I realize, okay, service is important, experience is important, but at the same time, I need the product that makes me unique and makes me grow.
Yes.
And that's when the concept of collectability, figuring, something that really inspired me to push myself. I mean, I wasn't into it. I wasn't a collector myself. Right. I wasn't watching all these animes. Or I wasn't an anime fan at all. But I realized that there's a huge demand for it.
Nice. Okay.
And no supply in the market. So I told my dad, you know, I want to go to Japan.
Oh, wow.
Okay. That was my first time. I took a few days off school. I took a flight, went all the way to Japan. Had no idea what I was going to do. I didn't even do my research properly. But luckily I went. it was like more of a holiday trip, but okay. then work at the same time.
Right.
And I went to the streets of Akihabara, which is like the anime district in Japan. And once I saw that, I think a good perspective of what I want TLT to shape into right. became a reality. Walked into the Bandai office. There was a receptionist. I even remember this day. I told them I want to start working with you guys. And they were like, I'm sorry. I mean, it was a multi-billion dollar business. And a kid walking in and asking to become a distributor was something that was crazy.
Wow.
But through different experiences, pushed forward, had opportunities with different people, met people in exhibitions, etc. Continuously right. went to different exhibitions around the world, built what we got today to the little things.
Right. And are you a collector now?
Yeah, okay. But no.
Is there one possession that you have that you're very proud of, that this is a collectible that I have?
So down the line, we created exclusives.
Right.
And those exclusives really mean a lot because no one has ever done that in the Middle East.
Right.
I mean, the Middle East is a small chunk when you look at the world. I look at the numbers that they show me for Europe and America, and I'm like, oh my God, the day that the Middle East will get to those numbers, I don't know.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, the MOQs that they put for those countries versus us, completely different.
Right.
And I think we need another 10, 15 years to get to those numbers even.
Right. But do you sell in those markets or are you focused only on selling
so
in the Middle East?
So in the collectibles, I only focus in the Middle East.
Okay.
But the kitchenware, that's where I have an international stance. And we're expanding day on day. It's something, I mean, two different businesses, but two different ways that to understand things and, right. and understand the future of what we want to do with both.
Right.
So yeah, that's how that business came together.
Wow. Okay.
All in a span of a few years. But what happened earlier, I mean, the little things dates back to 1977.
Oh.
So it's a brand with history.
Right.
And we've always been a collectible business in the right. sense of collectability. I right. mean, different types of collectibles now, but still in the collectible business.
Right.
And, proud of what we've done. Many more things that we want to do. I mean, this is just the beginning for us. And
yeah.
we always like to call ourselves, you know, a startup. We always like to call ourselves yeah. we're getting into it. And that's why we come up, we had the name of Little Things. I mean, I had the opportunity to change it and people were proposing it.
Right.
But I was like, no, I think it's the little things that really make the impact in someone's mindset to do big things. And
yeah.
I wanted to also keep it as a name of inspiration where
right.
it takes people beyond what they think of just a brand.
Right.
So we're your friendly collectible store that we say, that, yeah. that's how we position ourselves.
And your store in the Mall of the Emirates is retail therapy to me. Every
Thank
time
you.
I go there, I think I do spend some time going into the store.
We try our best.
And you do a good job
Thank
at
you.
It, I'm,
Thank
I tell you.
You.
So I think coming back to the conversation of two businesses, right? So
actually, we have a few more businesses, but these are the two
I'd
major
love to learn
businesses.
More, yeah.
So we had the kitchenware that I explained.
Yes.
I explained the dairy business, which is So the dairy, we shut down retail operations because I was stretched thin throughout all the businesses.
Right.
We focus on online, and it's doing fantastic online. We pretty much supply Toys R Us. Not Toys, sorry. We supply... Carrefour, Sharaf DJ, Amazon, Noon, and our own platform. And
right.
it's been doing great kitchenware there. We have Little Things, which we already discussed. We have a partner to Little Things, which is called Jazeel. So anywhere you see figures in the Middle East, that is Jazeel Distribution. So
right,
Jazeel
okay.
takes the brand on board right now, which is a company that came way after Little Things. Then it takes it and distributes it to the market. So we take brands exclusively on board, or we take distribution rights for the Middle East, and we distribute it.
And isn't that how that works for all toy industries in general? There's a distributor and there's kind of a retail.
That's exactly how it does work. But usually you start it as a distributor and then move into retail.
Right.
We've done it the other way around. Right. So the expertise that we have is retail expertise. So we understand what a retailer needs. We just recently launched a section in Virgin Megastore in Dubai Mall.
Okay.
Beautiful section. And if you go visit it and see it, you'll see the colors, the lights, the feeling that it gives. It gives a collector zone, and it's been great. I mean, that just elevated the whole collectability and the value of it. And something that's amazing in the Middle East that you don't get anywhere in the world is the quality and the delivery of service and production that we have here is unbeatable worldwide. I mean, I look at branding that's done here versus branding that's done in Europe. You feel like you're in a third world country when you're going there. So the Middle East is really developing into it, and the standards that the Middle East has set and the expectations that we have here is just phenomenal.
Yes. Also, go to market, right? So the time to market in the Middle East is much lesser than most other places in the world.
I totally agree. I mean, we get privilege when it comes to shipping. We get a lot of support from a lot of brands. I mean, I believe that the Middle East is the hub for the future. I mean, there's a lot of stable growth that's happening here, and that's just amazing.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm actually convincing all my friends and relatives all across the world to move to the Middle East.
That's the goal. I mean,
I keep telling everyone, Habibi, come to Dubai.
Yes, that saying really goes a far way.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. So coming back to the kitchenware business, right? Because that's your traditional business. That is our core.
That's about 80% of our business.
Right. So on the personal side, how is it like working with the family, right? So this is a question I always have been trying to figure out in my head. If my dad was in the office with me, I'd probably not function properly. But how does it work for you? I know your brother also works with you, right?
So being in a family business is one of the most difficult things to do. I mean, because you have to balance between personal and work. And it's not something that's easy, but luckily I have a very supportive dad. He's extremely supportive in ideas and taking the business to the next level and understanding technology coming in, because dealing with that generation is not easy nowadays. Yeah. I mean, I try to explain basics. I mean, I remember when it was iPhone 6 that came out, and that's when he changed from his old Nokia to iPhone 6. It took him that many generations.
That many years, right.
And I remember when I made that change, it was his birthday. I bought it for him as a birthday gift. And he looked at me and he was like, I'm not changing. And I was like, Dad, you need to. Now you want to take away an iPhone from him. It's not possible. I mean, he's connected to it. There's WhatsApp. There's his friends. And he uses it pretty much to broadcast and send helpful messages to people.
Right.
But it's an essential right now in life. And I've seen him develop into what is today the modern society of things. So he's always open to it. We were talking about the metaverse just 2 days ago. And explaining it to him, I had to explain it to him, like, break it down.
Oh, yeah.
But he understood it. And I was surprised that he understood it. You know, it was like, okay, Dad, we're creating a metaverse. We're going into the digital environment of something. And he was like, interesting.
Oh, right.
But dealing with family business, always a challenge.
Yes.
The most important rule is you need to really split up the home and work. And I believe that's one of the most important things. So early on, me and my brother, we get along very well. Thank God. we left home. We had to live alone. Main reason, he wasn't married, I wasn't married. We had to do this early on. And the main reason why is just to have that separation between family, because everything starts becoming, a late meeting starts becoming, oh, why are you so late? And
yeah.
I mean, it's just the mother love and the father love that's there. So once you have that separation, it really helps you.
Right.
Of course, balancing it out. I mean, family is still family.
Yes.
I get to see him every day in the office, so that's always nice.
Oh, nice.
Mother is not involved, but she's also a part of the discussion.
Yeah,
sometimes.
She would know every day what's happening.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. But family business.
Do you look to her for advice on business side or?
Surprisingly, looking or speaking to your father or mother, it's not always business.
Yeah, no, but I meant particularly business. Do you take any advice from your mom on the business side?
Yes. So sometimes what happens, and it's always interesting because things are very basic and simple, but in our heads, we always complicate things.
Yeah.
So once you talk to them and you talk to your mother or father, and usually it was my mother because she's my go-to whenever I have a challenge, she simplifies things. And once things are simplified,
oh, yeah,
you have the answer.
Yeah.
I mean, just discussing it with her gives you the answer. So,
right.
Yeah, that's very helpful. I mean, she's always been there for us. She's always been supportive. She was with me in Canada when I was growing up in Canada. So my dad was here. She was there.
Mashallah.
So I had a lot of opportunities with her. We even started a business in Canada.
Right.
So my dad wanted to expand the kitchenware in Canada.
Right.
And he was between here and there. So it was me and her. My brother was here with my dad managing the business.
Amazing.
I was about 5 years old, right. 6 years old, maybe around.
Wow.
And it was me and her managing the business.
Wow.
So I would sit there and code.
5 year old.
Yeah. I would sit there and code right after school. I wasn't doing much, but it was like coding on the computer. And then she would be the one helping me to, you know,
yeah,
get things done. She was like my supervisor, you know.
Wow, amazing.
So that's nice.
That's beautiful, right?
Yeah.
And the amount of sacrifice that goes into building family businesses.
It's unbelievable.
It's very inspiring to hear.
It is,
I think.
Yes.
Yeah. But I think continuing that journey, right? So like we were talking about technology, and now that I'm on the other side of the table, I've been a buyer of technology for 25 years. Now I'm a seller of technology. But, you know, at times it becomes difficult to get the conversation of technology going within a traditional business, because most people don't understand the requirements that come, right? How do you kind of, and I know that you are very tech savvy yourself and you've been a coder since 5. So how do you bridge that gap? What's important for the business today versus how can I help scale? How do you look at it? And how do you kind of, you know, help the team understand the requirements and go through?
So I have two types of colleagues that work with me. I have the old school colleagues that are over 20 years with us. And then I have the newer generation, you know, the Gen Z come in. Adapting to technology is not a necessity. I mean, it's not something that's optional anymore. It's a necessity. If
right.
you don't, you're out.
Right.
And you can see it across many companies in the industry.
Yes.
And in the world today. There's a lot that said, you know, this worked for us.
Yes.
And we're going to continue it. And that's right. not, I mean, you've seen them fall, break. We've seen a lot of companies go bankrupt because of something like that.
Right.
It's very important to get on board with technology. It's very important to be aware of technology. Regardless using it or not using it, I think being aware of it, being aware of what's around you is important.
Right.
And then deciding whether it's needed at that time or not. Just ignoring it and saying, you know, too expensive, or why am I paying for this online thing that doesn't really have a physical value, I think is old school now. I mean,
right.
that's so 2020.
Yeah.
You need to now look at where we are in technology and where we're headed. I mean, ChatGPT has changed the world.
Yes.
I mean, if I say this to my team, I tell them, guys, if you don't use ChatGPT, you're lost.
Right.
Don't sit there and draft an email.
Right.
No one reads those emails.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't have a powerful email, no one's going to read it. Use ChatGPT. Let
yeah.
it be the writer of your email.
Yeah.
Why do you invest so much time and energy writing an email that at the end of the day might not even get the attention or get the message that you want sent
yeah.
across? So using tools like that. I've seen it with Japanese companies. Japan,
yes.
I enter some meetings. They're still on the, you know, those circle mouse pads.
Oh, right. Okay.
We're touchscreen already.
yeah.
And I've seen it like huge companies where they've just deteriorated in
yeah.
a way where they were very strong once upon a time.
And right. And there's a resistance to change.
Now
right?
there's no so. More existence. I mean,
yeah.
how many people use a Sony laptop today?
Yeah. I hardly know anybody.
Or a Panasonic.
Yeah.
Great companies in the past. I remember going up with one.
Yeah.
I remember the TVs and the screens and all that, but no longer anymore. You have
yeah.
LG that took over. You
yeah.
have Samsung that came and took over. And the Chinese companies today have done amazing work. I mean, I walk in the Chinese exhibitions, huge exhibitions. I mean, there's one coming up in April. Unbelievable with the technology that's coming out.
Right.
And then you go to a European manufacturer and they're just back in...
Oh. Yeah, absolutely.
School days where they were and still develop the old technology.
Yeah.
So adapting is everything, and understanding that the ecosystem that is surrounding us is beyond what we think is imaginable. I mean, we need to really just explore and see what's possible and what other companies are using.
Right. I think it resonates with my personal experience, right? So when I moved from physical retail into e-commerce, I kind of started realizing that, you know, tech takes money to build, but great tech makes money. So when you implement it correctly, I think it gives you the scalability is exponential, right? So,
absolutely.
Yeah. But again, coming back to the kitchenware plus technology part, right? Because that is something that's changing. We are living that change today, right? With, you know, IoT coming in, kitchens becoming smart kitchens. How do you see that for your range of products? And, you know, are you seeing like smart products coming in the cookware ranges, et cetera? And how do you see that transitioning over the next, say, 3 to 5 years?
So as I told you, we're a very traditional business. I mean, even a family, a very traditional family. My brother is not that old. There's about 11 years between me and him.
Oh, nice. But same like me. My sister is 11 years older to me.
Exactly. So, I mean, we still have a very good connection. And what I've seen with him, and just seen it across the brand as well, is keeping things simple is what he wants to do. And I'm like, okay, yes, it's important. But also introducing technology is critical. Technology today is, you know, we've seen Bluetooth speakers, Bluetooth stand mixers, we've seen air fryers that are AI generate. They generate, so you don't need to actually set the menu, you put the food inside and then we'll actually decide what it wants to cook. We've seen a lot. Is it matured? Not yet. Right. Because it's just one company that developed it. As you know, homes, as you said, they're already becoming smart and they're becoming, you know, you can control your lights, your AC, your curtains, your door easily right. by the app. I believe that companies like Philips and Philips, LG, Samsung has already developed such in home appliances as well.
Right.
That is our next step, to merge into that ecosystem.
Right.
We already started, for example, with robot vacuum cleaners. So we already started our ecosystem when it comes to our application, our development of applications. But then we want to go one step forward more than that. I mean, already technology has already started with like Alexa connecting to vacuums, etc. But we want to go even beyond that and really redefine what AI and what technology can do. So it's just a matter of time, but it will come out. Technology, people are working on it. You have the world's, you know, manufacturing hub that's creating amazing technology every single day.
Right.
It requires more testing. It requires more time. But I believe within time, the ability of using AI and using technology in home appliances will redefine the way of living.
Right. Right. So, and now I know you do this every day. You switch between kitchenware and collectibles all the time. So on the collectible side of things, right, now I think there's a lot of prestige also that for a person who's a collector, there's a lot of prestige that also that's built into it, right? How do you kind of tier your customers, right, and understand who's your real customer versus who are people who like me who go browsing? For me, retail therapy is going to a little things, but somebody who's a collector and comes to your stores, how do you kind of segment those people?
So the beauty of little things, and when I wanted to create the new concept that it is today, is I wanted everyone to be a customer. Right. And then some people came back and said, that's impossible. You'll never get everyone to be your customer. We said collectibles are made for everyone. And in the sense of, you don't need to be an anime fan. You don't need to be a Marvel DC. But there will be something that will connect you back to your childhood. Because right. every kid growing up was watching, you know, a cartoon or something that would mean something to them when they grow up.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watch Teletubbies.
Oh, yeah.
Teletubbies in the past was a kid's show.
Yeah.
No adult would buy Teletubbies. Yeah. Today, it's no longer a kid toy. It's an adult toy.
Right.
So you would get collectibles or figurines or even like, you know, money banks that can allow you to collect with them. And Cocomelon, I don't know if you know, Cocomelon, every household knows it. Knows the songs, you know, I have a little niece and I remember them nonstop. I believe in the next 5, 10, 15 years, that will no longer be a kid's toy anymore, a kid's show anymore, because people are going to move out of it. And it will become a collectible.
Right.
And collectibility is all about bringing back memorabilia. And that's what we focus on. So memorabilia in any sense, in any term, that's what we cover. So for example, if you don't watch any anime, I'm sure you like music.
Yeah.
If you don't watch music, I'm sure you like sports.
Right.
If you don't do sports, I'm sure you have technology or gadgets. So we do all of this as a package of little things. So little things is not about just anime and collectibles and figurines. It's beyond that. So we have retro gaming. We have music albums that we bring in. Taylor Swift, for example, we have a whole section of merchandise from her as well that we take care of. Sporting, we do signed jerseys. So as I told you, it's the whole pop culture.
Right.
I'm sure there's something that would match your needs
Oh yeah.
When it comes to it. So we create that ecosystem and that feeling of what pop culture is, and that's what we focus on.
Right. And brings back another memory to me. So in my previous stint in Flipkart in India, one of the products that was the most expensive product ever sold was a cricket bat signed by Sachin Tendulkar. And it was probably a couple of 100,000 rupees, if not dollars. But yeah, I think that's how
that's people exactly go after it. That's exactly what we do. Right? That's exactly what we do. And we believe in really touching lives with what we do. I mean, we want to bring back that smile in your happiness. And right. We've seen a lot of people from a simple example that we did is during Valentine's Day, everyone focuses on the love and, you know, being loving and right. couples and marriage and, you know, right. dinners and all that. We're like, there's a lot of people that have broken hearts.
Wow. Okay.
No one cares about them.
Yeah. Singles Day already.
Exactly. Why do we have to celebrate it one day after? Let's celebrate it the same day. So what we did is we got together the community. We had about 50, 60 people that came in. We booked the Rove Hotel.
Wow, okay.
They all came in. It was supposed to be the Bloody Valentine's campaign. It did very well. I mean, people were very happy. We had a nice night out. We had quizzes, giveaways. You know, it was just nice to have people coming together and not thinking about the love of life, thinking about connectivity and collaboration together and working together. That makes a beautiful environment.
Yeah, absolutely a different take on the whole thing, right? Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Oh, I think new thing I learned today. And so looking at the future now, especially from a collectibles perspective, right? How do you see that? So I get the entire nostalgia, memorabilia part of it, but like you, one of the things you pointed out was how people will now outgrow Cocomelon generation will start collecting memorabilia. But how do you see this now transitioning over the next? How do you see it changing from the way it is today over the next, say, 5 to 10 years? Or do you see in the region, you see something specific coming up that is going to change this industry or
so
is going to continue?
This industry has always been there. I mean, if you look at it from people connecting banknotes and coins in the past,
stamps,
it's always there. It's not something that's new. But what we've done is we've redeveloped the way that people see it. We create an experience out of seeing it. It's not a museum, but it's a museum of the future type where we focus on all ages.
You're so Dubai.
So we focus on all ages. We want to bring back memories. And not only that, we want to show people what they can achieve in the future as right. well. And the way we do that is we really give them the full-on experience of history, current,
right.
and future. Right. Future in the sense of kids, toys, we bring all those kind of things that allow kids to start collecting from a very young age. Right. Hot Wheels, for example, the cars from Hot Wheels, they're trending.
Yeah.
And guess who buys them? It's not the kids.
It's the parents, right.
We have 30, 40, 50-year-olds buying Hot Wheel cars.
Yeah.
Brand new ones. And it's surprising.
Yeah.
People come back and tell me, you know, I thought you're selling to kids. My dad, when I started the business, he was telling me, you know, let's make kids happy. And he told me, I have a 5-year-old, let's give him a figure. I was like, Dad, no.
It's not for him.
It's not for him. You know, yeah. So that's the environment that we want to create. That's the club. And we focus on communities because that's what builds who we are and what we do. Right. So we have the community that are the gaming community. We have the Pokemon community. We have the people that are, you know, sport fans. So we cater every single industry in it. And we want to call ourselves the pop culture store in the Middle East.
Right. And in the Middle East, do you see different behaviors in different countries as markets? Or do you see it as a uniform?
So absolutely. Every market is different. Even stores. I mean, I have stores in Dubai Mall, Blue Waters, Mall of the Emirates. They're all different. Even though same country.
Right.
Same city. but we also get a lot of different clienteles that are different. Like Russia, like the Blue Waters is focused on Russian customers.
Right.
While Dubai Mall is more international based, we get a lot of different footfall of people. Mall of the Emirates is the community that's around the Barsha, Dubai Hills area that comes in. We've seen that these are the small things that create the vibe. But then when we go to expand it, so when we go to Saudi, for example, we've seen that, for example, anime doesn't do very well in Saudi. Even though it's the highest watched series or I more watched than, but what the collectors there want is DC and Marvel.
Oh, really?
Okay. But a lot of people don't know that.
Oh, okay.
So we have a live team that's all Gen Zs. They sit behind screens, they watch a lot of anime, they watch trends, they watch news, and we look at live things of what's happening, what's trending, what's not trending, and that's what we focus on. So if there's a big Coldplay concert that's happening, that would be our focus.
All right. Amazing. You touched upon this, but the entire metaverse thing, right? And I think that's where there's a lot of focus on collectibles, etc. What's your journey been? And are you looking at that as like a very serious place to be in the next few years?
I believe that is the future. It's something that's early to for a lot of people. I think a lot of people think it's not going to happen. It's not going to work out. People, the in-store experience will never go away. And it will never go away.
Right.
A lot of people think it might. It will never go away. But it will always become a showroom and nothing more than a showroom.
Right.
I don't think people are going to continue buying because of the competitive rates that you have online.
Right.
Of course, in the tourism industry, it will continue. I believe it will not die off. And being in Dubai, it's doing very well for us. But then looking at a country, like if I go into Bahrain, I think online is going to be much stronger than the physical store. But having a showroom is very important. And looking at the metaverse today and the possibilities on the metaverse, I believe that will take a chunk away from retail. That's even more than e-commerce has.
Right.
Because I think e-commerce, people don't get a feel, exact feel of things. So they have questions that they cannot get answered and they still want a personal feel. I feel like the metaverse will go into, you know, customers speaking to your sales agents sitting from another country, for example. Giving the full retail experience, but through a screen.
Right.
And that's what I feel will happen. I mean, looking at what a lot of retailers have already done, and you can see big groups here in the Middle East that do it already. It's happening, but it's just not happening as fast as we want it to.
Right.
And I think it's too early for it to happen that fast. But as we see new generations, as we see people stuck to their screens, it will happen.
Right.
It needs to happen because instead of you sitting and playing, let's say Roblox, you actually end up playing mall, visit the mall and buy some stuff.
Right.
And you just keep on adding to the shop. So instead of buying, you know, different skins and stuff on Roblox, you would come here and you would buy different products and you would get delivered to you. So I feel that that's the future of where we're heading.
Right.
And it's just a matter of time that it's going to come to reality.
Wow. Okay. One of the other things that's kind of important in your line of business is originality, right? So how do you kind of work around fakes? I'm sure there's a lot of those products out in the market. Do you spend a lot of your time worrying about all those products, or do you have like a system that takes care of it and you really focus on?
So it was a few years ago where a shop in Dubai Mall, a neighboring shop, started bringing a lot of fakes. I couldn't do anything about it. The principal did not want to get involved, which they were like, Middle East is such a small market, they don't want to do anything. And I was in a place where I was like, okay, I'm working so hard on bringing original licensed products to the Middle East to give a full experience. And then a shop opens next to me and starts, you know, selling fake. It was hurtful.
Yes.
But then what I realized is even if it's there, it's more about educating the consumer and focusing on the community that's much stronger than fighting the case. Because it's not easy to fight.
Right.
You need a lot of backup support and you know, any government also needs to have the proper documentation to make sure that they can properly fight it.
Right.
I'm not the owner of the brand.
Right.
I don't own the license.
Right.
I can't do much from my side to fight it.
Right.
And when the principal, the owners of the brands don't want to do anything, I'm tied. So what we focused on is redoing, and we launched a whole campaign for this, and it backfired on that retailer very well, where we educated the customer and the consumer of what is right and what is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Why does something need to be licensed versus why does something doesn't? So there's a lot of free content coming out. When you watch anime, it's all free.
Right. Okay.
These people that create these animes spend billions to put it together. And in order for them to make their money and continue making anime, they need to continue. I mean, they need to sell products through license. And when you educate the customer on that sense and when you educate them on the quality, because it's impossible that a fake item would look exactly like a new one.
Right.
They cannot get the same finishing. It costs a lot to make a mold.
Right.
It's not cheap.
Right.
And painting, if you want to do something original, it's not going to cost. It's not going to be a cheap thing to do. Where
right.
you would only do it if it's licensed.
Right.
And the volumes that you get internationally, etc. So we've seen that worked, and we focused on that.
Right.
We've expanded that education day on day. I attend a lot of exhibitions around the world, and there are fake people that sell. But then what we've seen is they go smaller and smaller and smaller until they disappear.
Right.
So as a distributor, I always get this question. They're telling me, you know, when are you going to fight it? And I always tell them, you know, forget it.
Yeah, it's not my fight.
It's a matter of time.
Time, right.
And time does show itself. I mean, we've seen it with huge brands. I mean, if I little things and I'm having these problems, imagine companies like Dior and Chanel, and
right,
you know how many fake hotels a day you walk into. Like Dior, you might get some hidden guys taking you show you some. So it's always there. It's always gonna be there. But then it's how you overcome it and how you educate your customers. I don't believe on seeing a wall and just keep on hitting it. I believe on working around it, because that's the only way to
actually, very mature way of looking at it. Yeah.
So it's very important to find solutions around the problem that you're facing.
Right. And this is something that I always admire about you, Hasan, is you're always working on yourself as well, right? On self-development. I know that you take a lot of time out to learn things, new things. How has that helped you in your leadership?
I think that's the most critical thing that any entrepreneur should do. There's never going to be a time that you would be perfect or you'd be great at what you do. People always say I'm good. I don't believe I'm good. I believe I have so much more that I need to learn in this world. I constantly try to educate myself through self-learning. And not only that, I also try to get at least 1 to 2 courses a year in. That allows me to expand how my mind thinks. Because usually what happens is I focus only on what's in front of me.
Right.
And there's the whole unseen that I'm not even thinking about. Recently what I did is I went to ChatGPT and I told the story of my life to ChatGPT. It came back with the unconscious things that I didn't even know about myself.
Nice.
Try doing it. It's something I was reading it and I got goosebumps. And it was telling me, you know, you focus on this, you don't care about that, self-reflect more. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
What AI can do today is unbelievable.
True, true.
And they say you use about 8% of your brain. I mean, I don't know how true it is, but...
Yeah, you know. I think for me it's far lesser.
I mean, I don't know if we can measure it today.
Yeah, probably. I'm sure there must be some measure of it, but yeah. But I think one of the other things that is fascinating is this entire journey of now from here, how do you see the business growing, right? So you have 3 running businesses, and how do you see these spanning over the next decade, right? Because that's where you are going to be building your, real business that you are building, or your legacy that you build, is over the next 10 years.
Of course.
What do you want to see that going out?
So for the kitchenware business, and that's the heart of the company, expansion into more countries. Europe is on my plan for the next about 2 years to expand it fully into Europe, a proper representation. It's a bit complicated because Europe is a very developed market, but at the same time, a market that has so much potential, because I was looking at pricing, and if I compare my pricing, it's unbelievable how expensive things are in Europe.
Oh, okay.
America, it's a dream for any entrepreneur around the world to be in America. If you're not in America, because the volumes and the spending power and the GPT of America is huge.
Right.
So that's another one. We started Canada and we shut it down. So my goal is to bring that back in the future. Right. That's what I want to do. I mean, we're pretty much covered with the Middle East and North Africa. Of course, we can do better. And we have teams working on it day after day to make it more successful and grow the business within the region. But that's the goal for kitchenware. And of course, adapt new technologies and making a more efficient process of how things work out.
Right.
With toys, I think that's something that is where I want to really redevelop. I think being a retailer is great, but because I've seen things from the other side of the table, which is the manufacturing side, I think I want to go into that manufacturing side, and I feel that that has a huge potential. Why do I always need to be a distributor of something or a retailer of a brand that's not even mine?
So own the value chain completely.
Exactly.
Right.
So I think that's where I'm heading in the next 5 to 10 years with little things.
Amazing.
Continuing what I do, but adding up to the process. It's the progress of it.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. I think our last section is mostly like a rapid fire, right? Where we want to talk about first thing that comes to your mind. And so a favorite book that's kind of helped you change perspectives.
So there's a few, but I'll just say one. Ikigai. I don't know if you've read it.
Oh, yeah.
It is something that really redefined how I see things in life. It's always my number one recommended book to anyone. I have a few in my car. I always gift it to people.
Right, okay. Wow, okay.
So it's something that I really love. It's a great book. I really love the Japanese culture and how the Japanese do things and the efficiency of how they do things. Of course, there's ways you can improve. It's not only, I mean,
the way that it
they're a bit slow, but the process of how they think, they live life, the way that they balance life, it's amazing.
Right.
It's amazing.
A piece of advice that somebody's given you that's really changed things for you?
I think it's my dad, because he's my biggest role model. Charity. Never forget to be humble.
Right.
Never forget to give your charity. It's a part of the family business. It's a part of the family values as well. We base our company based on the fact of charity. And, right. and you don't need to be noisy about it.
Right. I mean,
when you give it from the heart. And from I think heart, that's what matters most.
Yeah.
And keep on giving. There's never an amount that you should say, I'm limiting myself to. Religiously, sometimes there's a percentage that tells you must do. But then why can't you exceed that?
Yeah.
I always say the more you give, the more you get. Keep on giving.
Right.
And it's not about, like, I've seen people around the world suffer. If you go to Nigeria, a lot of parts of Africa, for example, India as well. There's a lot of people suffering. And a lot of people that have money and have the privilege of money just don't care about it.
Yes.
So for them, that 10 dirhams might be nothing. But for the person that's suffering, that 10 dirhams is everything. So my dad always teaches me, you know, why do you go and eat fancy food or spend at a 5-star or 7-star restaurant or whatever it is, or a Michelin star? And when I reflect, I'm like, yeah, it's true. I mean, if I had a, you know, a small shawarma, 5 dirhams versus a 300 dirham meal, it would both fill me in the same way.
Yeah.
But it's about, you know, of course, sometimes enjoying it and enjoying life is important, but also valuing how much you want to spend and how much you give back, because you could always give more. There's never a limit to how much you can give.
Right.
So I always encourage my colleagues, my friends, you give. And if you don't get, I guarantee you, I will pay you back. Because I believe that there is a lot that you can get, but have the intentions of giving and have the intentions of giving back to them, because it's mentioned in every single religious book today. You know, the more you give, the more you get. It's there everywhere.
It is.
So it's a universal rule that exists. And I think if we follow that rule, we can change the world.
Yeah, right. And what does Hasan do on the weekends?
So a lot of people know this. I mean, my office know this, and people that always message me, they always want to have a meeting or catch up for a coffee or something. But I technically live in the air. So usually weekends for me are on flights back or in out of Dubai.
Okay.
But if I'm in Dubai, I love to go cycling. I try to get as many people as from the office that want to join me to go cycling with me.
Right.
We do like the nice coast. We start at like Business Bay and then go all the way around to nearly Marina area and then come back.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
It's about 20, 25 kilometers.
So you do the entire Jumeirah track. And
it's beautiful. If you tried it, I mean, what Dubai has built, the area, it's very, and you get the sea view on one side.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah.
Weekends a bit busy, but then I try to go early in the morning, which is very nice.
Yeah. My neighbor cycles from Business Bay to Jumeirah every day to work.
That's amazing.
So he does this in this heat of the summer as well. So
that is fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I've done it a few times and I love it. I try to do it every weekend. Sometimes I can't, of course, but that is always nice. I try to go for running, trying to get my health into shape because I need to. But yeah, that's what I like to do. I like to really chill, relax, and do something and stop at a coffee shop, get some emails in. And
amazing. Yeah. It's been great chatting up with you, Hasan.
It is thank my you pleasure, and I loved it. Thank you so much for your time.
Before you go, where do our listeners and viewers follow you, and where do they follow your businesses?
So we are on Instagram and LinkedIn, or Facebook as well. I don't use that much. But Instagram, it's htamimi underscore me. That's my account. And the Altanan Group account is Altanan Group. On LinkedIn, same thing as well.
Amazing.
Perfect.
Thank you very much again for your time.
Thank you.
Pleasure talking to you always, Hasan.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. And if you want to follow Find, you can look us up at www.fynd.com. That's Find with a Y. The Y in the Find is because we find happiness in everything that we do. And we want you to find happiness in everything that you're doing. So until next time, stay connected, stay tuned, stay happy and cheerful. See you next time.